Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser said it all.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for this episode. On this episode, my guest will be Randy Hales. We talk Memphis and Power Pro Wrestling and much more. That's coming up soon. Hopefully everybody's staying safe out there from the weather. We know the snow is still a nuisance for many, so hopefully you're being safe and all is well. That's all I got here. Let's get right to it. You know me, I like to get to the interviews and the meat of the matter. So let's take a break, and when we come back, I'll have my guest, Randy Hills, so stick around.
Hey, you bums. We have to take a quick break.
Filsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit FilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilsingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams. Hey ho, everybody. Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
All right, and welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by the keeper of the Memphis Wrestling Flame, Randy Hales. Randy, how are you?
All right, Dave, tickled to death to be here. I'm Memphis wrestling born, Memphis wrestling bred, and when Randy Hales, by God, dies, I'll be Memphis wrestling dead.
Yeah, well, hopefully that doesn't happen anytime in the near future. But
just turned 63 years old last week.
Really?
Fact on December the 10th.
Well, happy belated birthday. And man, 63. Wow, you're still out there and doing it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, look, you're like you said, you're Memphis through and through. You grew up in the Memphis area, right?
Yeah, I grew up about 70 miles from Memphis. I grew up in Northeast Arkansas and Jonesboro, Arkansas.
Yeah.
Got hooked in the early 70s by watching Memphis wrestling. At the time, it was on WHBQ TV, Channel 13, the ABC affiliate there in Memphis, and it switched, of course. And Dave Brown and Lance Russell were the hosts of that show. And then in 1977, when Jerry Jarrett broke off on his own, started Jarrett Promotions, then that was 1977. That's when they moved to Channel 5, which I think most people remember the show coming from the WMC studios at 1960 Union in Memphis, Channel 5, the NBC affiliate.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's a mecca, right? I mean, I've been to Memphis many times. And every time I'm in town, I stroll by that TV studio just so I can say I went by it.
They got it locked up like Fort Knox.
Yeah, oh, I don't go in. I just drive by, just so I can say I went by. Oh, you know, always go and go and see the Mid-South Coliseum every time I'm in town.
It's just so sad. By the way, I want to tell the audience, I want to say hello to the audience. Hopefully you guys have either watched or listened to my show on the Randy Hales channel on YouTube, on the Randy Hales Facebook, at RB Hales on X, all my stuff, because Dave is a regular watcher and viewer of my show.
Yeah.
And I want to invite everybody to check us out, because not only do we talk about Memphis wrestling, we talk about all kinds of wrestling, we talk sports. About the only thing that I try to keep us straight away from, unlike Jim Cornette, we don't talk politics. And he's a friend of mine.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. I stick away from that too. But yeah, you're super active, right? I mean, you got the podcast thing going on YouTube, whatever else. You're all the time on Facebook streaming live. You never know when Randy Hales is gonna pop up streaming on Facebook.
Now you normally, when I stream, I use a service called Restream, and when I stream on the Randy Hales Facebook, the Power Pro Wrestling Facebook, the Memphis Wrestling Hall of Fame Facebook, at RB Hales on Twitter, at the Randy Hales channel on Twitch, and Classic Memphis Wrestling on YouTube, and the Randy Hales channel on YouTube as well. So we're all over the place, Dave.
Yeah. It's not hard to find Randy Hales, is it?
Not hard at all. And you found me tonight. I had trouble finding you. I thought you were kayfabing me. I left work early today and got here to make sure I could get online and all that. And I thought I was being swerved. I thought you were double crossing me.
No.
You could hear me, but I could not hear you.
That's right. We had a little technical difficulties, but we powered through and we got it done. And just like Memphis wrestling, man, the show might change. It might be card subject to change, but it's always going to be there.
And I always say there's nothing more exciting to me than live television. This is live. This is recorded to tape, obviously.
Yeah,
a live situation, but the high you get, and things do go wrong. It really does. It went on when we did live TV in Memphis, and I think that was the beauty of live TV, when hardly anybody, if anybody at all, besides Memphis Wrestling was doing it, we were doing it, and it was just the excitement of it. And that's why I like doing my shows on Mondays and Tuesdays at 7 Central Standard Time. Now, we're coming up on holidays, so the next two Mondays we're not going to be on. So I don't know what you're going to do, Dave. We'll be on the next two Mondays, but we will not be on, that's the Power Pro show, we will not be on the next two Tuesday, because that is Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve.
That's right.
I think I would get divorced, excommunicated, all that sort of thing from my family. Especially if I miss Christmas Eve.
Yeah. You gotta do that family thing, don't you? The family thing's always good. But Christmas is always a notorious, that's a wrestling holiday, right? That's used to be. That was a big night for wrestling.
You know, it was all over the country. Memphis didn't have a tradition, because it, you know, if it was on Monday, we would just go ahead and run the show in Memphis on Christmas Day. If Christmas was on a Tuesday, we'd go to Louisville, Nashville on Wednesday, Nashville on Saturday. So it just depended. Our Thanksgiving tradition in the Memphis territory was stronger than our Christmas territory. But before we get off and running, I'm sure you have 10 million questions, because on the show, when you watch the show via YouTube, you send me questions all the time. But I would like to ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
To start off this interview. I can't help myself.
All right, go ahead.
Anybody where I do interviews, they see the producer in me and the booker in me, because I tend to take over pretty much. But I'm interested. Obviously, you told me earlier that you're originally from Indiana. Then I see what the people can't see, a t-shirt, and I'm assuming that's you.
That's me. Yeah, that's me. That's me with the t-shirt wearing Dick the Bruiser. Yeah,
Dick the Bruiser. So, so you're originally from Indiana, and my question is, was it the Indianapolis territory where you were from? And my second question is, what era and where did you get hooked on this wacky world called pro wrestling?
Well, it absolutely was. It was the WWA. That was our local thing. Everybody I knew had a Dick the Bruiser story. That's my man. Dick the Bruiser is my hero. Dick the Bruiser is my favorite. Always has been, always will be. And everybody, my dad hated professional wrestling. Did not like professional wrestling at all. But yet he had Dick the Bruiser stories. Yeah, my father was a police officer. I was born and raised in Columbus, Indiana, which is kind of south central Indiana. We were about an hour from Indianapolis, about an hour from Louisville. And he had stories of he pulled Dick the Bruiser over one night speeding when he was in town. So even him, who didn't like wrestling, had Dick the Bruiser story. Everybody had Dick the Bruiser story.
Did your dad ever arrest Dick the Bruiser?
He did not arrest him. No, he actually told me he didn't even give him a ticket.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, my dad said he pulled him over for speeding. Dick the Bruiser got out, chatted him up, popped the trunk, showed him some title belts, swooned him, and my dad let him off with a warning. That's what he always told me.
So where did they do the TV in Indianapolis? And I think I know the answer to this. Who is most famous? Of course, in Memphis, we have Lance Russell and Dave Brown. Later on, Corey Macklin, Michael Sent, John, who is on my show.
Yep. Tuesday.
Who hosted the WWA TV when you first got hooked on wrestling?
The when I first got hooked, the primary guy was Sam Miniker. That was the host. He was the guy, you know, come down from wherever and worked with Bruiser. Then into the 80s, because I got hooked in the very late 70s, early 80s. My grandmother was a wrestling fan, and she bought it hook, line, and sinker. You know, she was your typical ringside granny, right? She loved the baby faces, hated the heels, and that's how I started watching wrestling. It was very young, watching it with her, and she took me to my first show. She lived in a little town in Indiana called Edinburgh. And she took me to my first show at Edinburgh High School, watching Dick the Bruiser in WWA. And it was Sam Miniker was the guy calling the matches. But then later through the 80s, when I kept watching, in the 80s, it was Dave McLean was the guy that called it in the 80s. So that's late 70s and into the 80s is my period. But so the stuff that I most prominently remember was the Dave McLean stuff. We can all thank my grandmother for getting me hooked on it.
All right. She cursed you with that. I have one more question before you get to me. And that question is, what gave you the interest of following? Because you're very informed, very informed. I am impressed on some of the questions you ask. I'm sure you'll ask some good questions today.
You
always do. But what got you hooked and knowledgeable about Memphis wrestling?
Man, I don't, you know, here's the thing. I've always been this guy. I always love comic books. I love, all that kind of stuff. These superheroes, right? These bigger than life, the good versus evil, the colorful, the characters. And when my grandmother first showed me professional wrestling, I thought, holy cow, this is comic book superheroes in real life. These guys are in the ring. There's, you know, there's the good guy, there's the bad guy. They're tussling in the ring. I, you know, of course, I've always been a fan of, you know, the interviews. That's what's always drawn me in, right? Is you know, the talking. And that's always been my favorite guys, or the guys who could talk. But it's just what it was. It's just everything, man. It's just that good versus evil, that these characters, these bigger than life guys that just, you know, I don't really follow professional, you know, modern wrestling current product a lot. I try to watch, but I miss the days of when the guys you watched on TV were not your kind of your everyday average Joes, right? These were your guys that you knew wasn't a guy you were going to run into. These were the superheroes. And it just drew me in right from the get-go. I was fascinated, and right from the start, I consumed everything I could find. I wanted to know everything. I wanted to buy every magazine I could find. I wanted to watch every program I could find. I traded tapes when it came to that time. I was enthralled. I was consumed. I wrestled for a while, and when I got to that age, I just locally there in the Midwest. I promoted some shows in the Midwest. I always just wanted to be, I always tell, and I tell my wife and everything else, you know, professional wrestling is my longest relationship of my life. It's always been there. For as long as I can remember, professional wrestling has been in my life in one capacity or another. And it hooked me from the get-go. And it's always been there.
Hey, let's talk some Memphis wrestling. What do you got for me today, Dave?
Yeah. Well, you first got involved, like so many others. Like we talked about Dave McClain, he did it. Scott Romer did it, whatever. Right? You were selling pictures. You did some ring announcing. So how did that start? I mean, you were a fan, right? You went to Memphis Wrestling. So how did it start that you got a little involved there in selling the pictures and filling in and doing some ring announcing? How did that start where you got to be a part of the show?
Well, going way back, I started watching Channel 13 Wrestling out of Memphis when, in probably 1971, 72, I was 10 or 11 years old, and I got hooked on it. And the very first angle I ever saw was the angle on Memphis TV that ended up selling out the Mid-South Coliseum in Memphis in 1972. So this would have been 1972. That Big Al Green was trying to goad Jackie Fargo into putting his hair up. Fargo wouldn't do it, but Al Green started talking about Jackie Fargo's dead old drunk daddy, and Fargo came out and did a crying interview. Just the early days of Jerry Jarrett, how creative he was, and it sold out the Mid-South Coliseum, and I got hooked at that point. It's a very interesting story because, you know, it's funny how you can just get lucky, and you wouldn't think you could get your break at what you'd be obsessed with your whole life at that early age. But one afternoon, I asked my dad to take me. I lived on a street called Warner Avenue in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and I asked my dad to take me to the City Water and Light Park at the corner of Cherry Street and Culverhouse Street. Now, this had a big impact because there was just one other kid there. And with that kid, we hit it off pretty good. His name was Randy Wade. He was younger than me by 7 or 8 years, but we were playing around and doing all the things kids do, maybe throwing the ball, whatever the case. And my dad and his dad sat on the bench and they were talking. And so my dad was asking, said, what's your son's name? And the dude said, Randy. And the dude's name is Charlie Wade. He said, Randy. And my dad said, well, that's neat. My son's name is Randy too. He said, well, what does your son like? What's he interested in? And he said, oh, he's crazy about wrestling, crazy about the wrestling on TV and the matches. He's there every Saturday night. And my dad said, My son Randy is crazy about it too. So we take him two or three times, but we usually do the family thing. And I said, we just don't get, said, I would love it if he could go every week because he would love it. Then Mr. Wade said, my dad said, well, I am the chairman of the wrestling committee that promotes wrestling in Jonesboro through the American Legion every Saturday. I'm in charge of that committee, so I'm the local promoter. Where do y'all live? And my dad said, we live two blocks away on Warner Street. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, me and my wife will come by and pick up your son every Saturday night and take him to the matches, and said, we're allowed guests and won't have to pay. So just a chance encounter in the afternoon at the park led me to the Wade family, led me to go to the matches every Saturday night. And certainly Eddie Marlin, it was his town. And so all the wrestlers back then before gimmick tables would hire a kid to sell pictures. So I got 5 cents a picture, and I happened to be Eddie Marlin's favorite. I've always been a hustler and a go-getter and a seller. And he liked me from day one and didn't let anybody else take his pictures. And he knew, because at that point in life, I wanted to be a disc jockey. And I used to carry whatever, a pencil around or whatever, and playing and all that sort of thing. Well, several years later, I was a freshman in high school. And I don't know if I did a book, Living the Dream, the Randy Hill story, and I don't know if I told this story. If I didn't, shame on me, because it's a great story. So this is several years later, and I was selling pictures, that sort of thing. Eddie Marlin knew that I had the dream to be a disc jockey anyway. So they had an old American Legion guy, a former commander of the American Legion, and they were doing, remember how the American Legion used to do Poppy Day for the veterans and sell poppies and that sort of thing? This dude's name was Charles Jewell, and he did the ring announcing every Saturday night. So we had the big week of poppy sales, and it ended on a Friday. He didn't show up for settlement time. He didn't show up on Saturday night. And the ring announcer for Jonesboro, Arkansas, with no notice at all, didn't show up. And Charlie Wade went to Eddie, told Eddie, said, well, I've asked all these other American Legion guys. There's nobody to do it. I can't do it. I don't know who's going to do it. And Eddie said, go get Randy Hales for me. I was out selling pictures, going up and down bleachers or whatever, and he pitched the day. And I think it's probably I was getting paid, because I was also doing the program at the time. I would get paid $5 an article. I didn't get paid for announcing in Jonesboro, period, ever. And then it evolved into me being the Mid-South Coliseum ring announcer along with Lance, and sitting with Lance doing commentary, that sort of thing. But what I would encourage everybody, if you have a dream, if you have a passion, if you have that passion, because the passion keeps me going today. You know, I don't try to make money off the wrestling business very much anymore. I do that show Monday, doesn't cost a dime. I don't make a dime. Do the show Tuesday. Doesn't cost a dime, don't make a dime. I'm doing this show and do other podcasts, many of them throughout the years. Don't charge a dime, don't get a dime. I do it for my passion. So my lecture, my speech, my motivation here today as we talk with Dave today is, folks, anything is possible.
Yeah.
You don't get breaks, you make great breaks. Eddie Marlin thought I was a hustler because I sold more pictures than anybody that he had selling pictures for him. Later on, that ended up for me, as he was the end of, to me, to get into the Mid-South Coliseum and introduce me to everybody. And then in after college, and I started going to all the towns announcing and help Eddie spot do the spot shows and promote them. And Jerry Lawler just recently in 86, in about April of 86, took over the booking job. And Lawler, as brilliant as he is, he has so much going on. He needed help in the office. So for the first time in my life, I moved from Jonesboro to Memphis, and Lawler had a little building in the back for our office, and they got me in the office. A year later, Jarrett took over and moved to Hendersonville, Tennessee, did that. And it would have never happened, Dave, would have never happened without that meeting, without that running into Charlie and Randy Wade at City Waterlight Park in Jonesboro, Arkansas. And I did my part because I did a good job selling pictures. When they asked me to ring announce, I could have said no. I did not. I went a lot of places. I said, hey, you need an announcer, so-and-so. Place I can get my dad to bring me. He said, well, might not be any money for it. That's okay. I made my break. And made a lot of money out of it, and eventually went from a picture seller to the owner, the founder, the president of Power Pro Wrestling. That's a long-winded answer, but we have to set the stage. I know you pretty much know my story.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you know that part of the story?
Well, not about the guy, the kid you knew and how that got started. I wasn't aware of that, but yeah. Like you said, you were with Jarrett Promotions for a long, long time, right? Doing whatever. I mean, like you said, you sold pictures, you did ring announcing, you did commentating, you did whatever it took, helped promote, help book. You did a little bit of everything.
I did more than help book. I did book, you know.
Well, correct. Right.
Eventually with the sole booker. And in the history of the Memphis territory, when you look at the tenure of as far as how many weeks or years or whatever the case in the list of people that booked, Jerry Jarrett would be number one. Part of that time would be with Bill Dundee as his assistant. Bill had shorter runs as the booker, but as far as being the booker, the longest run in the history of the Tennessee territory is Jerry Jarrett. The number two run would be Jerry Lawler. And the number three run as far as tenure would be me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and like I said, you were with them right all the way, from, through the CWA, where they were call themselves CWA, when they call themselves USWA. But you had a little 3-year period, right, from 91 to 94, where you were there. What happened during that period? Well, what led you to kind of leave them for that? I mean, it was just a short 3-year period you weren't really there.
It was 89 to 93 because okay. I was hot at that damn Jerry Jarrett.
Okay.
Sometimes with Jerry Jarrett, the Nick Gulas came out in him, and I was always first and foremost Eddie Marlin guy, and Jerry Jarrett was Eddie's son-in-law. But between Jarrett and Lawler, the owners of the company, I was always more of a Jerry Lawler guy. I just was. Right. I wasn't happy with him, was burned out, that sort of thing. So I left. Then in 93, Jarrett signed a deal with Vince McMahon to go up there, and Lawler immediately again. He was more busy than he ever was because he was working for Vince as well. So he knew that most of the time he wasn't going to be around. So he reached out to me and say, hey, Jerry won't be around. Can you help me? And so I started as the assistant booker and running the office. And then it ended up where after we did a big show, a Memphis Wrestling reunion type of show, Monday Night Memories, where we started the Memphis Wrestling Hall of Fame in 1994. And then so from 94 on, until I quit a second time, and that's when the wrestling company sold. Jerry Jarrett sold out to Lawler. Lawler sold out to Investment Group, and the guy putting it all together was a con man by the name of Larry Burton. The Selkers were the person that opened it, and I saw the place going to sink quick, real quick. So I quit. Dave Brown quit in the same day. It's funny. Dave quit to me because I was still the general manager and the booker of the company. So he called and said, man, I can't jeopardize my job at the TV station, and this is going to end bad, Dave. And they said, I hate to do this to you, and don't know what you'll do as a backup plan. You might want to do it yourself. And I said, Dave, I'm not going to do it myself because I ain't going to be there either. I said my next call was going to be to Jerry Lawler. And so we got out, and then obviously quickly they were the run started in 77. This was in 97. It was a 20-year run, and the TV station with the new ownership canceled the show. And by April of 98, I started my own deal, Power Pro Wrestling. Where I was the owner, the founder, president.
And what you talk about with everything going on, that's why, like, the Memphis tapes, it's such a mess right now, right? It's not clear who owns the Memphis tape, who owns the rights, because everything's so convoluted with who owns what, and it's still such a mess all these years later of from that, you know, with you know, Lawler selling out and different things, and it's just a mess.
Hey, there's nothing convoluted about the ownership of the Power Pro days.
That's right.
100% me. 100%.
That's right. And because when the USWA and all that, you know, kind of ceased in 97 and early 98, you started Power Pro. And so what triggered that? I mean, obviously there's a hole, right? Memphis wrestling's always been there, right? There's always been a need for Memphis wrestling. What led you to finally say, okay, I'm going to pick this up and do this?
That phone conversation I had with Dave, that he called to give me a notice, and I told him I'm about to give mine. I'm not going to give a notice. I told him, I said, I'm just not going. I said, I'm done. And I told him, I said, here's the thing. I agree with you, Dave. Things are going to go bad, real bad. It's going to be shady. It's going to be bad, bad, bad. So you don't need to be a part of it, and I don't need to be a part of it, and so I'm going to get out. And I said, I guarantee, I don't know if it would be in 3 months, 6 months, or 3 years, but Channel 5 will want the wrestling show. And I've always had, because the last 3 years before that, they, with me producing and booking the show, they saw success and ratings and everything we did. And so it took one meeting. One meeting. And so that was easy. Unfortunately, time changes everything. And I signed a deal for a 3-year contract with the general manager, Mason Granger, who's from the Memphis market and knew. The day of our first show, April the 14th of 1998, was his last day. So he made sure to sign a contract. If I knew he was leaving, I would ask him to give me a 10-year contract. But so I didn't think a thing about a 3-year contract. So it was just 3 years. In the meantime, new general manager, and the focus of the TV stations, like most local TVs, are the news, 100%. They hired a news director, and that news director got in the ear of the new general manager. Neither one of them knew about the value of the TV show, even though that Channel 5 was the last place network in the Memphis market when they got the wrestling show in 77, and Channel 13 was the number one. Within 3 months, the last place network was Channel 13, And the number one market in Memphis was Channel 5, mm-hmm. without a doubt. You know, so yeah. We all knew that value. The new general manager, even though we tried to tell him, he didn't realize it. The sales manager wanted the wrestling studio as a big, elaborate new studio. And so they had to wait till the contract ended up, and they just didn't renew. And do you know how much notice they gave me?
How much? No notice, I would guess.
Well, after the TV show, number 153, April the 7th of 98, the director of operations or production or some dude asked to see me in a conference room after the show. And basically they said, and they were giving, I was a little nervous anyway, because I was calling and the new general manager wouldn't call me back. I was wanting to renew, and Dave kept telling me, oh, you don't have anything to worry about. You don't have anything to worry about. But after show 153, go upstairs, and he tells me, next week is your last show.
Wow.
The fact that I didn't kill him is shocking. And yeah. The very next week, he was one of three that I tell this story in my book, Randy Hales Living the Dream, is that I got mad after the TV went out and got a big club out of my head and had in my hand, and I was going to go murder three people. That was my intention. And folks, this is not no bullshit. And I don't know if you cuss around here or not.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Say whatever you want.
I was good. My whole dream, I felt, was over. Now, that's been 2001 since it's been over, and I'm just fine. Just like I said.
Yeah.
63 years old, done a lot of exciting stuff, made a lot of money, and I'm happy with my life now. But at that time, Dave, I thought the life was over, and I was willing to kill for it. And I had that big club in my hand. Guess what happened?
What happened?
Had it in my hand, and I was going to go in and do whatever I was going to do. And I think you can pretty much tell by the tone in my voice that I wasn't a good place in my life, because it was a point in my life. Wrestling, all I knew, all I wanted to do. It was my life. Didn't see life without it. So I was willing to spend the rest of my life in prison or get executed, one or the other. Because that was what fire in my mind. So I had that. Brandon Baxter was my right-hand man.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So he was out there when I grabbed the thing, and I won't say what really set me off, but something did set me off, because they had the overhead door open. Something that was going on in that TV station I didn't like. That's what set me off. But Brandon was yelling and cussing and trying to grab the club away from me, but he's a big old boy now. He wasn't then. No way in hell he could get that. I'd have whacked him if I had to. I was that out of control. But I was born at night, Dave, and not last night, I guarantee you. I would have fought Brandon for that, and I would have gone in and did my business. But the damn police precinct was right across the damn street. All of a sudden, with me with the club in my hand, here comes the cop, rolled down the window and said, Randy Hales, what in the hell are you doing? He was across the street, been watching the TV show. He said, I heard... said I stop by from time to time, and said I'd go by and saw you out here with the club. What's going on? I said, hey man, don't tell anybody. This is real secretive. He said, oh, I won't tell anybody. I said, we're rehearsing a little bit for TV next week. So by this point, I wasn't gonna be there. I didn't give a fuck if I exposed the business or not at that point, because I knew that it was gonna go away. And as far as Channel 5 is concerned, it has gone away for forever. But so the cop saved me, because that would have been a premeditation. Is after he left, then I went and killed the guy.
Yeah.
So that's that story.
Yeah, man, that's Memphis wrestling is so wild. With things like, I mean, that makes me think of old Billy Joe Travis.
Remember Billy Joe Travis, yes.
Yeah, Billy Joe, right. When he got arrested for whatever, it was back child support or whatever, and they told him to whatever, to make a part of the show or whatever. It's like all the, you know, and Lawler getting hit by the car, you know, driven by Eddie Gilbert, people calling in saying that they tried to kill him. And man, people take that Memphis wrestling seriously.
Absolutely. I mean, it was the most watched show, prime time or morning time or children's time, it don't matter.
Yeah.
It was just unbelievable successful.
Yeah.
So many wild and woolly and crazy stuff.
I mean, yeah, when you do live TV for that long, you know, that many years every week, man, there's just, it's crazy stuff happens and you got to roll with it.
A lot of people, we doing a series year to year, as you know, you're watching the show every week on Tuesday. We started with 74 and we finished up last night 84. There's so much. And one thing, and I understand the reasoning why a lot of people, first thing that comes to their mind and they ask questions about Andy Kaufman. Yes,
yep,
I realize that guy, Memphis Wrestling, more mainstream press than anything, and it was good for Jerry Lawler's career. But was it the best creative that ever happened in Memphis wrestling? Was it the best feud that ever happened in Memphis wrestling? No. Was it the best house show run ever in Memphis wrestling? None for any of them. So I get aggravated when those people just think of Memphis wrestling. You can think of Memphis wrestling and just think Jackie Fargo, and I'm fine with that. You can think just Bill Dundee, and I'm fine with that. Certainly Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
Jimmy Hart.
Uh-huh.
All those people, I'm fine with that. But for the first thing that comes to your mind with Memphis wrestling is Andy Kaufman. Not to knock Andy, and I liked Andy. I really did. But I get frustrated, Dave, that sometimes that's the only thing people know. And we could have except I don't have the time. I got to make some money. We could have a 50-hour podcast.
Yeah.
And I don't need notes.
Yeah.
And I don't think you need notes for questions. We could keep it up for 50 hours.
Yeah. Well, hey, one thing that this is just a me personal thing, right? As growing up as an Indiana guy, Dick the Bruiser, one thing that I always fascinated me with Memphis wrestling is that 1982, that very, very brief, that partnership with Dick the Bruiser. You were around, it was very early, right? Were you around? How much of that did you see, whatever, when Jerry Jarrett was helping Dick the Bruiser? And it fell apart pretty quick because of Bruiser. And he was sending a lot of talent, right? The New York Dolls were the WWA Tag Team Champions there for a run. And Spike Huber and Steve Regal were coming down to Memphis and working. I always remember that, and it didn't last long because of, you know, obviously because of Dick the Bruiser. But
it didn't last long because Dick the Bruiser did not want to give up the top spot.
Absolutely.
So in Memphis, we had Pop. They had Pop. I don't want to say we, because I wasn't in the office by this point. So I don't
take
credit for that at all. But when I say we, I'm talking about Memphis wrestling. We got Kamala hotter than Pop.
Record
business. It was just doing great business, and Lawler had put him over, and he had went through Tommy Rogers, Bobby Fulton, Terry Taylor, Ron Bass, Stan Lane, Steve Kern, Bill Dundee, and Jerry Lawler.
Yep.
It was week after week after week with starting with a little underneath names, but all great talent, great workers, and they got him over, and then they put the Southern title on him, and then they ended up blowing it off in the summer. They would send the video of Kamala up to Dick the Bruiser, and they had started a partnership that I don't think was ever on paper. And you can probably tell me, was the Bruiser Aaron Jarrett's Memphis TV, or were they putting it together? How was TV at that point?
Yes, there for a few weeks. Yeah, for a bit, he was there at some of the Jarrett TV, and Bruiser was struggling by that time. And his territory was struggling. And but a lot of that falls on Bruiser.
And the first thing, I believe it was the first show, could have been the second. There wasn't a lot of shows at all. I think they might have even done a Thanksgiving show. I'm not sure on that. But yep, Victor Bruiser worked with Kamala.
Yep.
Gary Jarrett wasn't there. And the Bruiser went over.
He did. Yeah, that's what kind of ended it, right? Because, some unspoken agreements, right, of what would happen if Jerry was going to help Dick, and Dick just he couldn't not put himself on top, and you know, yeah, like you said, Kamala was the hot thing in Memphis, and I believe it was in Fort Wayne. Dick worked Kamala, put himself over, and that Jerry said, well, no, you know, I don't need to do this, and like I said, it didn't last long. There was some good stuff out of that, though, with the, like I said, with Spike Huber, Steve Regal working the New York Dolls. That was some good stuff. Some of that those tag matches, right? They you know, Huber and Regal come down and work the Coliseum. And those were some good matches, right? You got to see, it was always crazy to be seeing the New York Dolls on Memphis TV wear the WWE tag titles. That was just nuts for me up in Indiana. Because I was close enough to Louisville that I could get Louisville TV. Right, so I could see that the Louisville Memphis tapes, and it was something else to see that.
Yeah, just one of those things that so many people throughout the years just didn't know when it was time to step aside and get people over. And Bruiser, you know, Spike Huber looked like $1 million. Now, who is kin to who? Who was Steve Regal? Kin to, and who?
Yeah,
one of them, Regal and Huber. One of them was Bruiser, and one of them was Wilbur Snyder.
Correct. Spike Huber was Dick the Bruiser's son-in-law. Steve Regal was Wilbur Snyder's son-in-law, and but it all fell apart because during this time, when Huber was down in Memphis, he met another woman, and he left Bruiser's daughter for a while. So that's it. The Bruiser Huber partnership connection fell apart for a while because he left Bruiser's daughter. But
I think he still lives in Memphis, doesn't he?
He does. He is in Memphis. He is married to Bruiser's daughter again for a second time.
Right?
He is. Yeah. He's married to her again. Yeah. They live in Memphis and to this day. So,
now, and I believe what year did the Bruiser die?
In 1991.
And what year did Wilbur die?
1991. It was the same year they both died. It was pretty close,
is that right?
Yeah, it was pretty close date-wise to each other. That they died, and so I believe Regal's still married to the Snyder's daughter to this day. I'm in communication with both, so yeah, I believe Steve Regal still, but Steve Regal ended up seeing the writing on the wall, and you know, went on and did some things in AWA and different things and moved on. Mr. Electricity. That's right. But him and Huber were a good tag team. They were exciting, but you know, Bruiser didn't pass. He didn't pass the torch to some of these young guys just fully, and you know it killed him. You know, like I said, I'm biased to Bruiser, but yeah, he does obviously have his faults. But
you know, one I will say this about Memphis wrestling in '93 when Jerry Jarrett went to be full-time with the WWF. Mm-hmm. Lawler was doing Monday Night Raw, and so certainly most Mondays he was gone. Sometimes before the Attitude Era, they just aired every other week. But still, Lawler was gone a lot. Jerry Jarrett, who was running the business then, he was gone. And damned if the top babyface in the territory that would make every town, Jeff Jarrett, they hired him.
That's right, yeah.
In 93, we had the top star Lawler, not there very much. At the most, he would do some Mid-South Coliseum and some TVs, at the most. Very rarely the rest of the towns. So all of a sudden, we had to create a top single babyface, and we did that in Brian Christopher.
Yep.
And then I went over the moon with a push on him, and then we went with a tag team called PG-13. Mm-hmm. And they got over more than any tag team in Memphis after the probably 1986 when the Fabulous Ones were regular in the territory.
Yeah.
So we had success there, and we had success with that run.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing, you know, Memphis is always known for, right? I mean, guys, if a guy would move on, Memphis always found someone else and always made it work. Switching back to the Power Pro, you were the first developmental territory for the WWE. What was that like? And were there ever any issues with the local talent when some of these WWE contracted guys would come down and work?
Some of them, it hurt their feelings because obviously all of a sudden that we got at times 12, 14 guys in from the WWE, mm-hmm. everybody coming from there looked like athletes.
Yeah,
I mean, they had more of a look for TV than most, not all, but most of the local Power Pro originals that we call them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there was some hard feelings there, but my guys, you know, worked with them as well. And the talent, I mean, I'm telling you, Steve Bradley, the late Steve Bradley, was just fantastic. I mean, hard to explain. Apparently, Vince McMahon knew something that we did not know. Didn't have a liquor problem with him, never any concerns. He was the Power Pro champion at one time, well, three different times. He was great. We also had Aaron O'Grady, who ended up, he is no longer with us. He was Crash Holly. WWE. Steve Bradley is no longer with us. I would say that one of the top guys that we had was the first Power Pro heavyweight champion. This was in 1999. Baldo is what we called him, and he is famously known now as the head trainer for the WWE, Matt Bloom.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Great, and there's just so many. And then Lawler and I had a little falling out, and somebody else, Kick-Ass Wrestling, Memphis Championship Wrestling, got the deal, and then ended up making back up with Lawler, and we had the next go around, we had Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, all right.
Danielson, the American Dragon. Yeah. So over.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, Jim Ross was the director of talent relations, and I love Jim Ross. Never had a crossword with him. I didn't care for Bruce Pritchard at all. I thought Bruce Pritchard was very anti-Jerry Jarrett, even though Jerry Jarrett had nothing to do with Power Pro in any way, shape, anyway. Apparently, when Jerry Jarrett went up, whether he did it on purpose or not, Bruce kind of felt like Jerry Jarrett was treating him like a gopher and an idiot. And so he kind of blamed Memphis Wrestling. So he wasn't a big fan at all. So you know, we at times had a couple of falling outs, and nobody was threatened or anything like that, which is what happened with Jim Cornette in Ohio Valley Wrestling a couple of different times. He drank Gilfield. I'm not saying I wasn't ready to kill people. I've already told you that.
Kill
people. That was a whole different deal, though, in a whole different situation at the end. But overall, it was good. I thought we did a very good balance. We balanced these impressive. Oh, I forgot one guy. You might have heard of him.
Kurt Angle?
1998. Yeah. What the hell was I talking about?
Yeah, I was waiting for you to
first break. Ever professional wrestling match was in March of 99, Kurt Angle.
Yeah. And
certainly we had those, but at the same time, we wanted to keep the loyal viewers of 50 years watching Memphis wrestling. We wanted it to be structured like Memphis wrestling. So major angles, major stories, Jerry Lawler, Bill Dundee, we would bring people in and put stuff together people would know, and we would incorporate people. It was just a great balance, and it worked for us.
Yeah, so how much did WWE, did they give you much direction on these guys when they came for what they wanted, what they, you know, character-wise or story-wise or whatever? Did they guide you much, or did they just kind of let you do your thing with their talent?
They would normally just send me a list, like we talked about Crash Holly. Certainly, they hadn't invented that yet. Fournette was third parties of the WWF, so he called me and he said, he's a hell of a worker. You'll like him. He can wrestle. He can work. A little small, but he'll fit in. That's all he said. Steve Bradley, he said, you'll love this guy. He can do anything, modern wrestling, but with enough nothing. The only specific deal, and it came from Bruce, not JR. JR probably wouldn't have said this, and I wouldn't have done it anyway, that Bruce said with Kurt, said you can't beat him. So
no. Yeah.
I said, okay. I said, when the comes time to do it, I'll let you know. But he probably won't be here that long. because I know they had big plans for him. So when it was time to do it, it's time to do it. And so he had won. He had defeated J.R. Smooth. Do you know who J.R. Smooth became?
No, who was that?
He later became Rikishi.
Oh, yeah, right.
So one of my favorite matches ever, and Kurt Angle's first championship anywhere in professional wrestling. Obviously, he had won the gold medal in the Atlanta Olympics. I guess that counts pretty damn good. I don't have an Olympic gold.
No.
Hell, I don't have a pro wrestling championship. Anyway, I booked a lot of them. But still, we had a hell of a match. And Rikishi dropped the belt to him. Rikishi had defeated Michael Hayes for that championship. Michael had defeated Baldo. And then at the end, when it was time for Steve, for Kurt to leave and go full time, we put it on Steve Bradley, who was a WWE contracted guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and since Power Pro, you've championed the history of Memphis wrestling, right? You, like you mentioned, you wrote a book talking about you and your background. You have a podcast, you have all the countless live feeds that you do on Facebook and this and that. And you also are the founder of the Memphis Wrestling Hall of Fame. So tell us about that, because it's kind of odd to me that it took so long for someone to step up and do a Memphis Wrestling Hall of Fame, because that just seems like it should have been there years ago. So tell us about, you know, what inspired that.
We were on our ass. Jerry Jarrett and Jeff had left to go to the WWS. Lawler was booking, but he was a part-time booker, and we were bad on our ass. I mean, worried about survival. Yeah. Bad on our ass.
Yeah.
So Lawler told me one day, he said, help me out here, Randy. If you have any ideas, we need something. He said, maybe to hotshot something to get eyes on the product again. How can we do that? And I said, give me 20 minutes. I'll call you back. with the idea.
Yeah.
And it already had run through my head when I called him back. I said, hey, he said, that was quick. I said, well, I've thought about it before. I said, the legacy and history of Memphis wrestling. I said, we'll do a show at the Mid-South Coliseum in Memphis. And the week before, the Monday Night Memories event is what I called it, Monday Night Memories. The week before, the Mid-South Coliseum drew 700 people. The week after, with the Coliseum and Monday Night Memories, we did almost 10,000 people. The week after that, it dropped, but not dropped to 700 people. It dropped to about 6,000. So the idea was to bring back some of the pretty much a tribute to the history of Memphis wrestling. Jimmy Hart did a great song. Folks, if you have not heard this song, Monday Night Memories by Jimmy Hart, there's a music video put together with that, and it's fantastic, and we had played that. Then I had the idea, because Lance Russell had left and had been gone for about 5 years. He had went to work for WCW. That didn't work out. He was back, basically, retired, and I pitched the idea to Lance. We brought Lance back, put him in the Hall of Fame, one of the legendary names, Sputnik Monroe. Mm-hmm. So we did the first class of the Memphis Wrestling Hall of Fame. So my idea was to do it every year. So we did it in 94. That success of that show, I went from the assistant to the booker. 95, we did memory type of show in Memphis, Louisville, and Nashville, and we did a Hall of Fame. My idea was to do Hall of Fames every year after that, but it all went away. By 1996, I just didn't think we could risk the expense to bring in the talent we would need to do. So years later, and I'm trying to think of my head, it was probably it could be, I'm thinking 15, 16 or 17. I was a general manager at Jerry Lawler's Hall of Fame Bar and Grill downtown. Yep. Memphis on Bill Street.
Yep, on Bill Street. Yep.
And so we did some there, and our last one we did, and the headline act was a Boogie Woogie Man, the boy from New York City.
Yeah.
Rolling into Memphis TWA, tell old lady, handsome Jimmy's on the way. He's a rocker, he's a roller, he's a little funky too. He was raised by a gypsy, you know, old handsome school. So that was the headline act. Also, we had a tribute to, I wish you had a camera here, because the set has this beautiful belt. We presented Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee with a beautiful belt, and we called the presentation the rivalry through the ages. We also, that night in Jackson, Tennessee, the Rock and Roll Express, Handsome Jimmy Vagan, Danny Davis. We had Tom Pritchard, Mo from Men on the Mission, PG-13. And just it's a fantastic, fantastic deal. And I have a deal in mind to do one in 2025 as well.
There you go. Yeah, I met you one time. On there at on Bill Street,
in
Lawler's. Yep, you were. I was there. One of the times I was in Memphis, I was in there eating dinner, and you were there. I got a picture. You and me met. You shook your hand, talked to you for a moment. Yeah, I'm sure you encounter all kinds of people. But
I an asshole or was I?
No. You were a good guy. Yeah, you were a good guy. Talked to me for a minute, and you know, posed with the picture, and. There and everything. Yeah, it was all good.
Did I take you down and show you the VIP room? Because I didn't
know
if I had time to a lot of people. But I just didn't have time.
Yeah, it was a little busy that night, so you must not have had time. Yeah, so.
Was Lawler there?
No, he wasn't. Not that I know of. No, he wasn't there that night, but unfortunately. But good memory there. Like I said, I got a picture of you and me, Randy, from there on Bill Street, on Lawler's, but... Yeah, so I got a weird question to ask you, and this is kind of off topic. I come across a tweet you made a few years ago that said that Tony Khan called you like 25 or so years ago to review some of the wrestling shows he'd written. Is it, what? Tell me about that.
It was in, I don't remember if it was in the USWA days, and he had called the wrestling office. So it was a bit of the USWA days, so he was really young. So that was a time period where the business was protected. So he calls and tells me who was, and he said, can I send you samples of my writing? I said, first of all, I don't call it writing.
It's
matchmaking.
Yeah.
And then he sent it and put a lot of thought in us. And for somebody, he was probably at best in his teenage years. And I didn't put two and two together. Even when TNA started, I did not put that together.
Yeah.
That was that kid. So Dave Meltzer called me and said, Randy, I don't give out phone numbers. And at this point, TNA or AEW was in business. And so I knew who Tony Khan was at that back. At that point, I just wasn't putting two and two together, but that's the kid
that
asked me to review his thing. So they book us, and they had me help. We brought Brandon Baxter and Austin Idol and Jimmy Valiant and Doug Gilbert and Rock and Roll Express, different people in, and I obviously had contact for these guys. So at the end of the night, after the show was over, like you do, you get a payoff and you thank the promoter. And so I say, Tony, he said, I know you are who you are. Randy, you're Randy Hills. I said yes. And I said, thank you very much for the money. And then he said, we met once before, and he told me that story, and then I remembered.
Yeah.
He told me the story. I said, do you remember? And I did remember that. A kid calling and asking to review the TV, would have never imagined. The world is so small. I never would imagine that would happen. So I said to Tony, because, you know, it was a protected business, kayfabe all the way back then. So I said to Tony, I know how it was then, and everybody in the business was I a prick to you?
Yeah.
And then he said, Randy, if you'd have been a prick to me, then he said, did you like your payoff tonight? I said, yeah, blown away by it. It was great. And he said, if you'd have been a prick to me in that phone call, you would have been booked on this show, much less got a main event type of payoff.
Yeah.
That's you remember? A cool story.
Yeah. Do you remember the stuff he sent you? What was it like? Was it all right?
WWF.
Yeah.
And a lot of Japanese type of stuff.
Yeah.
Type of thing. Just for a kid, I thought he did a hell of a job.
It
wasn't like formatted like you would normally, but that's just somebody.
Sure. Yeah.
Like a kid playing matchmaker. I did that when I was a kid.
Sure. We all did. I mean, who didn't? Right. Yeah. I mean, all of us did, whether it be with, you know, some kind of figures or some kind of whatever. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, me and my friends freaking made a card, like a card type game just to play, right. To have our own little, everybody did something, right. I mean, if you're this passionate about it, I was consumed by it. Right. So I created ways that pretty much every waking minute was consumed with wrestling in some way or another.
I can tell you, so I can tell you real quick, then we'll get back to what you're going to say, not to interrupt you, but this is a cool story too, that once I graduated high school, I would drive from Jonesboro to Memphis and work Monday night. Then I would get in the vehicle On the Monday night after the Mid-South Coliseum, I would leave my car most of the time at Lawler's house. Sometimes we'd take it by the TV station and have them make sure nobody stole it. But so I'd ride back to Memphis with Jerry Jarrett, Eddie Marlin, our video cameraman, Randy West, and Tojo Yamamoto. Then on Tuesday, I would go to Louisville. I'd stay with Eddie on Mondays. Then I would go to Louisville on Tuesdays and ride with Jerry Jarrett and Tojo Yamamoto. That was the era with the Fabulous Ones and the era with the limousine. And so we get in the limousine. Jerry Jarrett didn't like the backseat of the limousine. So here I was, a kid in the backseat of a limousine and Tojo Yamamoto chauffeuring me and Jerry Jarrett in the front seat. So then I spent the night on Tuesday night at Jarrett's. On Wednesday, after I woke up, I'd go down to the office and I'd hear this conversation. And then I'd go every Tuesday, same routine every week. And then one Tuesday, he gets in the car, and a lot of times he worked in the car, and he had shown me TV formats and that sort of thing. So I was familiar, even though that I had never been to the TV station before. But I was familiar with what a format thing. He said, Randy, I feel like a nap, but I got to get TV done. The first draft of the TV. He said, here is my book. Look to Monday's date. You'll see the card. Then lay out a TV show that will sell me some tickets. And when I wake up, I want you to go over the TV segment by segment. So it was a lesson. So he sleeps, I work, I get it done. I segment by segment goes over the thing. And he did positive feedback why this would work, this wouldn't work, whatever. But that following Saturday, again, still, I wasn't going to TV, Dave, but I watched the TV, and 95% of the show I laid out. These days, they say right, and at that point, we never say that. You say laying out or booking TV, not writing TV. But there it was, and that's where it all started.
Yeah, it's wild how that stuff worked. I mean, that's kind of, you know, when I, that little bit I worked, right? I was riding around with guys like, you know, Diceman Ronnie Vegas, who was a Midwest mainstay guy and did enhancement stuff for WCW. And I rode around with the guy who works for as Bobo Brazil Jr. now, but, you know, he worked for WWA as Calypso Jim. I mean, these guys, you know, I would ride around with them, and I would just shut up and listen, and they would talk to me, you know, tell me and teach me and whatever else. But I think that's something that's kind of missing in modern day a little bit, you know, right? I was always trying to get with those guys that had years in, and so I could learn and pick their brains and listen to their stories. And I don't know, it's a different breed now, I guess, but you know, it is what it is.
Influences over me, of course, some people that I rode with a lot. I rode with Tojo a lot, Eddie Marlin a lot, Jerry Jarrett a lot, Bill Dundee a lot, the Angel, Frank Morrell a lot.
All
these veterans and throughout the years rode with a lot of folks, and you just learn by doing that.
That's right. Yeah. And I mean, like I said, you've done a little bit of everything, right? You now, you know, like I said, you have the podcast, the live streams, the Hall of Fame events. So what's next for Randy Hales? Do you have, anything else, any other ideals brewing, you know, for the future, or just, is it just keeping up with the things you're already doing?
Yeah, I do something to make a living, obviously, and I do that every day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Which is something as simple as driving Uber and make a hell, I make more money at Uber than I ever did in the wrestling business. And I made a lot of money in the wrestling business.
I really did.
And the restaurant business as well. So just on the side, you know, we'll do, in 2025, we'll do another Memphis Wrestling Hall of Fame deal. As far as people ask me, oh, why don't you go book AEW? You can get it up, blah, blah, blah. Well, first of all, you think at 63 years old that I want to be involved in something that chaotic?
Yeah. Yeah.
And even though the money, I'm sure, would be unbelievable. But yeah, it just looks to me, this outsider looking in, Tony Khan basically is not, he is going to drive the ship.
That's right.
And unless I'm driving the ship without having to risk my money in driving the ship, you know, I'm not interested.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot. I mean, again, it's very, very now, nostalgia is very marketable, right? Lots of people are into the nostalgia, right? Into the memories, into their whatever. And the fact that you're out here keeping Memphis history alive, I would guess that helps kind of feed your urges to be involved in the wrestling. And I mean, like you said, the Hall of Fame events those are big events, right? Those are talked about, and those are, gosh, I mean, those are names that are there. And like I said, you do a lot of, you know, you do your podcasts, your live streams, you do a lot of other podcasts like mine and others. I mean, you're all over the place. You're kind of one of the go-to guys for Memphis history, because you were there so many years involved in so many different ways. You know, it's one of those things. It just never leaves your blood, does it? It just, you always, somehow you always stay involved or want to talk about it and be a part in some way.
Until the day I die, I'll be absolutely born and bred. I had a quick question, whether if you want to edit this out, it's nothing exposing anything or bad language or anything like that. I do my shows on Tuesdays, talking Memphis wrestling with a local school administrator, with a banker, Pat Trammell, the school administrator, my friend Chris Ellis, the banker is Pat Trammell, and of course, legendary broadcaster Michael St. John. We do that show on Tuesdays. Again, we use a Restream service, and it's on 3 Facebook pages, 2 YouTube channels, and on Twitch and on X. Mm-hmm. We spent, and this is a question to you that I wanted to ask, back in after that September 21st show, were you watching in September when we played highlights of the actual Night to Remember event in Jackson, Tennessee?
Yeah, I did see some of that, right? Yeah.
As a matter of fact, some of it I showed last night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do remember. Yeah, I saw some of that back then. Yeah, I do remember that. And a lot of that. Like, and I heard, you know, guys like I'm kind of buddies with Gene Jackson, who I think was there, attended. He got to see. I think he did his the Retro USWA podcast of his. You were on there a while back and stuff. But yeah, I do remember you on your streams. Yeah, showing some of that and everything. Yeah, I do remember that.
A lot of fun, so just keep it all alive, keep people, and people enjoy the show. We build up, I call it Team Hills, build up a lot of regulars from all over the world, lady from Canada, lady from Thailand. We just have fantastic, a gentleman from Boston, you from Indiana, now from North Carolina. Now, how long have you lived in North Carolina?
About 5 years, so not too long. Right. But just about 5 years, but... Yeah, I mean, I like it. There's not a lot of, I mean, there's wrestling, but there's not, but I love, you know, I've been to Raleigh a few times. I got to see the arena there in the fairgrounds.
The Dorton Arena,
yeah, and stuff. And it's, you know, just to get to see that is, you know, kind of takes your breath away, and know what, you know, everything that was there. And so, yeah, that's one of my things. Every time I go somewhere, even if I'm just on vacation or visiting, my first thing is I always want to see what the local wrestling sites. That's always been my thing. You know, I've taken cruises and gone to Mexico, and first thing I want to do is check out, you know, the local lucha scene or whatever it may be. That's everything I do. That's what my first instinct is, always to see, you know, the local building. I mean, yeah, I've been through Ohio with the Chillicothe with Bobby Fulton, and got to see the building there on the fairgrounds that hosted wrestling for so long, and been to those shows. And everything else, that's everything. Everywhere I go, my first instinct's to seek out those, what's left of those historic wrestling buildings, and want to see them. Those are landmarks to me. And I, again, like I said, every time I'm through Memphis, I love just going and, you know, looking at the Mid-South Coliseum, looking at, you know, Channel 5, the building there and everything else, just knowing what's been there. Just it always takes my breath away. I'm always marvel at it, no matter how many times.
And, cool. We are rounded third, headed toward home. Anything else you have?
No. No, just before we get out of here, like I said, you've got a lot going on. What's the best way for people to follow you so they can keep track of all the Randy Hales goodness that's out there for them to see?
The Randy Hales Facebook page, the Memphis Wrestling Hall of Fame Facebook page, the Power Pro Wrestling Facebook page, at RB Hales on Twitter X. Also, the Randy Hales YouTube channel and Classic Memphis Wrestling YouTube channel, and also the Randy Hales channel on Twitch. But we have one person watches it on Twitch. One person, but I'll take that one person. And
that's right.
Very,
that's right.
Very active for stuff. You can go to Amazon, or you can go to RandyHalesMemphisWrestling.com. My book, Living the Dream, The Randy Hales Story, with the foreword by, have you got that book yet?
I do. It's on my shelf. Yep. Absolutely.
I was going to say I'd send you one, but folks, you can go to Amazon, Randy Hales, Living the Dream, order it that way. Or if you go to RandyHalesMemphisWrestling.com, RandyHalesMemphisWrestling.com, that comes directly to me. And so I can personalize it doing it that way. So which route did you go, Dave?
I'm pretty sure I don't know. I've had it for a while. I don't remember. Mine's not personalized, so I'm guessing I got through Amazon or something.
Yeah, then you got it on Amazon.
Yeah, I must have got it through Amazon.
At the venues, I would have signed it. And
I've got so many books. I've got I'm a book guy. I love books. I've got so many bookshelves full of books. And I'm so behind on my reading. I can't keep up with how many I have. But there you go. I mean, there's so many ways to experience Randy Hales. You got to order the book. You got to follow him on social media so you can watch those live feeds and everything else he does. And then you know, stay tuned for those Memphis Hall of Fame events. You know, hopefully another one coming in 2025 that everybody's going to want to check out. I mean, you know, Memphis history alive and well. And you're one of the guys, Randy. It's out there keeping it going. And I love WWA Indiana. I love Crockett stuff. I love so much wrestling, but you know, there's always, no matter who you talk to, there's always that special place for Memphis wrestling. It's so influential and such a great product for so many years. And Randy, I appreciate you coming on again. We'll have to have you on again, because I think you and I can just talk for hours on pretty much anything wrestling related. I think we could just drop a name and you and I could talk for a long time.
Hey, we got a little confused as we had technical issues on my end. I couldn't hear you. So I had in my head the way I wanted to open my opening statement. Also, the way I wanted to do my closing statement. The opening statement I didn't get in because it was chaos. I didn't think we were going to be – I think you were worried too that we
– I was, yeah. I was a little nervous, yeah.
Yeah, for some reason – I couldn't hear you. You could hear me, but I need somebody to talk to.
Yeah, that's right.
I couldn't hear any question. How I was going to open this is the way for 30 years, Lance Russell opened the wrestling show. And it's appropriate if I kind of change it up again and say, hello again, everybody. Randy Hales and Dave right along ringside, all ready to go. Talking Memphis wrestling, and the most elaborate, most fitting way for me to end this show. And I thank you much, Dave. This has been a pleasure. This has been fun to do. You're great on my show, and I appreciate that. And I'll close with that. For Dave, this is Randy Hales saying bye-bye, everybody.
Hey, you bums. We have to take a quick break.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF Project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade. So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The Outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the Outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
All right. Thank you to Randy for coming on and being a guest on the show. Thank you guys for joining us and listening. Make sure you follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much every platform. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or The Dave Dynasty, all one word. While you're out there, go check out all the WrestleCopia Network of Podcasts. You can look them up on the individual podcast platforms or go to WrestleCopia.com. And also be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to ClassicWrestling.net or download their app on all of your smart devices. My guest on the next episode will be Vandal Drummond. We talk all about Southern California Wrestling, Lucha Libre, Dr. Jerry Graham, and much more. So you don't want to miss that episode. Also, be sure to check out Randall with Ray Russell on one of the new regional wrestling shows as they discuss the dying days of the Los Angeles territory. The first episode is available now, so get that wherever you get your podcast. The guys set the stage by discussing LA in the 70s. It's a great episode. You want to check it out. So go subscribe to Regional Wrestling right now. Guys, thank you, all you listeners, supporters, and everything else for all the follows and interactions. I greatly appreciate it. Once again, stay warm and be safe out there. And until next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.
Wrestling Nostalgia is copyright Dave Dynasty. Bruiser voice done by John Lawson.